Welcome back, everyone, to the latest edition of Back to the Podcast. And today, in this podcast, we are dealing with one of my favorite genres of movies and television, and that is the zombie genre. And we are going to get stuck into Mr. Walking Dead himself.
Oh, man. This has been quite a journey, because I'll tell you what, a couple of months ago, 8 weeks ago, I'd seen less than 5 episodes of The Walking Dead, right? And I'd watched those 5 episodes like a couple of years ago. I watched series 1 sort of on and off, and I was like, yeah, it's all right. And then I just thought, oh, everyone tells me how good it is, and series 7's out, and I'm going to need to do this. So me and my wife, we sat down and we just made the fucking time to watch this series. And over the course of 6 weeks, we just caught up. And then by magic, we managed to time it so that we watched the penultimate episode of series 7 like the afternoon of the day that it aired. So we'd rocketed through it, and we didn't even know when it was going to air. And we got to the end, and was like, oh, that's the last one. That's the last one that's available. When's the next one? Oh, in a few hours. Great. Zombie break, you know, and prepare for the finale. So before we get into this, we need to say full disclaimer. This is full spoilers. You know, there's 7 series of this thing. Obviously, we're in April 2017. So series 7 is finished in, I think, all countries. So really do not listen if you've not seen this series until you've caught up, because there's a hell of a lot of spoilers that we're going to talk about. So you've been warned, full disclaimer. Let's go.
All right, let's
do it. I'm excited.
Okay, right. So the zombie genre is a very, very funny, interesting little thing. I would describe it as bracketed under the niche genre, and it was niche for so many years. It has had many directors be involved with it. It's had some sort of very small fringe actors get involved with it. And an interesting thing has happened. It's a bit like when something happens in fashion that's kind of like, or cooking or whatever, that's very kind of like, oh, have you heard of that? Oh, no, not really. And then all of a sudden it becomes mainstream. Yeah. And where we're at right now is people like Brad Pitt, people like, yeah, for real, man. People like Brad Pitt, you know, people like Will Smith, you know, have been taken and have bought into movies and have done things like I Am Legend, right? World War Z, all these kind of things, right?
I think we review World War Z on this podcast,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Still available.
But these things it's gone from this tiny little fractional outsiding lame horse that it was to a huge Derby winner, you know, it's a huge big thing, where now we're dealing with 7 series, 7 years worth of something, which goes to show that there must be something in this topic for it to last this long and to become this prolific, and to have this kind of caliber of actor say, I want to do a movie in this thing. There must be something to this, right? So, and that was our alert.
I don't know what that bing means, but let's just turn that off. That doesn't matter, yeah.
Byron's fascinating moment of the day. So what I wanted to do was to try to open up the podcast with, try to trace back the roots of this to see where did this come from, and why is this happening? Why, what is this fact? Why are we dealing with this?
I have a theory.
This? I have a theory as well, mate.
Okay.
So who wants to go first? You go first.
I'll go first. I think my theory is that I don't think The Walking Dead, the zombies are kind of a secondary character. It's not really about the zombies, I find. I think it's about, and the reason I find it interesting, so obviously it's just my opinion, everyone's going to take something away from this, but I think it's more about humanity, and it's about the idea of what would happen in sort of essentially post-apocalyptic Earth, you know, America, England, whatever, you know, and you find yourself asking yourself all the time, what would I do in that? You know, what would happen if you came upon a town with no crime and punishment, with no law, with no economy that we know as today? And all of that, the zombies were the catalyst, you know, that they made it like that. But then, if I'm honest with The Walking Dead, there was only so far they could go with, I'm being chased by zombies, they're biting me. You know, they're not going to get set very far with that. Then they're certainly not going to get 7 series out of it. And the best things about The Walking Dead, if I'm honest, have not been the zombies. It's been everything else. It's been when they've encountered, you know, what have they done to survive? How have they done that? Who have they met? You know, and what and the worst things that happen to each other, ironically, are normally down to the humans and not the zombies. You know, it's what humans become in a in this horrible situation where the world has basically destroyed itself. And I think, if I think back to some of the, I mean, I'm not like you. I only know the kind of really commercial zombie stuff. So I've seen the World War Z, I've seen the I Am Legend, I've seen Shaun of the Dead, you know, which some would argue kind of, it was difficult to make a serious zombie film after that film because it made such a great mockery out of the genre, the whole genre, you know. But I've not seen any of the sort of the classics like Dawn of the Dead, you know, any of the sort of the original stuff, which I know you have and I know you really love. But for me, if I look at any of those ones that I've seen, I think it's the same thing where it's not really about the zombies. The zombie started this process. It was the catalyst. Look at World War Z, you know, the thing happens and they take over and they all die. But then it's like, right, what do we do now? What do we do now in this fucked up world?
Okay, Bear. All right, here it comes. So I don't think you're wrong, but I don't think you're completely right either.
Okay.
So I'm not interested in the what. I'm not interested in the how. I'm interested in the why. And I think you've definitely got some really good points that you say that have evolved naturally with this kind of story, this kind of genre. But what I wanted to nail down was why? Why do we do this? Why not the nuclear bomb? Why not some kind of disease? Why not some kind of outbreak? Why not political turmoil? Why not oil shortage? Max. Okay. Why? Why this? Why this? And here's what I think is the answer, right? So it's to do with society, again, in that respect. But here it is, right? In our society, death is very sanitized. You know, someone dies, the body is kept secret. Even after, if you're dealing with the scenes of accidents, I remember talking to police officers and people involved in that. They don't show the family members the body. You show them, this is the jewelry we found. Mm. Could this be their jewelry? So in our society, in our culture, death is very sanitized. We're sort of kept away from it. It's not part of the process of life. It's this other thing that we kind of keep really, really separate from us. And I think that because it's kept separate in that way, it introduces this strange fascination that we then have with the macabre, which is why you have these weird festivals around the world like Day of the Dead. It's why we have things like Halloween and the way we do it. We start to develop, the more you're told you don't jump on the bed, the more you want to jump on the fucking bed, right? Yeah. So we somehow subconsciously develop this really interesting fascination with death, with what happens, what does it look like?
Well, we do it every day we drive on the motorway because it's called rubbernecking, isn't it? You know, if you know there's a crash up ahead, what does everyone do? Everyone slows down and looks because it's car crash territory. You don't want to see a hideously disfigured body, but you kind of do at the same time, right? Which is why everyone slows down and looks.
There it is, told in a way that where everyone's like, fuck, this is, you know, you've just spelled it out for everyone. So we have this weird fact, I mean, we know we shouldn't look, but we want to look. It's that whole thing, right? So naturally, I think that lends itself to, okay, let's tell a story about it, you know, because it can't all be, you know, Bridget Jones's Baby. Know what I mean? So okay, so now we've got stories about it. So where do we start from? Now we've got to here, where do we go after this? Okay, well, where we go is George A. Romero, who was the guy back in the 60s that came out with Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. This all then came from there. But this is Pappy, okay? George A. Romero is the godfather, as far as we're concerned in this genre. So now we get to this point. But now we hit a problem. Now the genre of all zombie storytelling hits a problem. And the problem is this. You've got a movie. You've got maybe 2 hours if you're lucky to play with. So here's what you have to do. You start, no zombies. Some event happens, then zombies, then the scenario, then the end.
Yeah.
Okay, that's every zombie movie right there. Start to end. This is what you're stuck with 2 hours of time. So why The Walking Dead is so interesting is because, one, it exposes us to the macabre, this thing we're fascinated with but we know we shouldn't talk about. But secondly, it's so interesting because it deals with the timeline, like you said, of what happens way after the apocalypse. Months, years, what happens way after. And that's why, for me, The Walking Dead has broken so much ground and why it's so fascinating and why I tell people, if you're going to watch a series, this is one that you probably want to have a look at.
well said, and I do totally agree with you. I think they're all different points, and they're all reasons as to why this series is so great. I mean, I truly loved it. We need to get into this series now. So that was a really good introduction. Boom. Really good introduction. But let's get into The Walking Dead now. But I have to say, I absolutely love this series. It's gone up there way into my top three favorite series. I just think it's brilliant. And part of the reason is because of all the reasons we just said, which is it's really interesting territory. We've not seen it very often. We've only seen it in film format. So to be able to develop these characters and develop these plot synopses so in such a detailed fashion is great. But the other reason I love it is because it's so well acted. It's one of the best acted series I've seen. You know, we've got really interesting characters and character development, and obviously the characters are always cycling. Again, I warned you, spoilers, but
do it.
Characters are always being killed off, and we're always being introduced to new ones, which presented me and Brian the other day with an interesting idea, which was really this series could go on forever if you think about it, because actually you could kill off every character that's currently in it in a cycling way and always be bringing in new ones, which means that we could always have a story and there could always be people on in somewhere that survived in a different way, which means that potentially the series could just go on forever. But yeah, the character development and the acting is one of the best I've seen, and it makes it so watchable, you know. We'll come to series 7 in a bit, but you know, we talk about bad guys. I mean, I can't think of a better bad guy than Negan, know, and we didn't meet him until, you know, what, the end of series 6, and he comes out with his baseball bat, and I just think, this guy is amazing. He's terrifying, but absolutely amazing, this actor and this character, you know, and fair play to them, but shame they waited so long to wheel him out, because, I mean, Jesus, I could have had a lot more of him.
Well, he's the ultimate end of level baddie, you know, for the gamers out there. Fortunately, we get a few of them as we go, as the seasons come about. But I suppose really the story revolves around the character Rick Grimes.
Yeah.
Who, and this is one of my favourite things about The Walking Dead, right? So he is played by the British actor, Andrew Lincoln. And I remember very early on seeing message boards come up from, let's say, two seasons had gone by, set in Atlanta, set in the South, and Americans were posting up there that they had no idea that this guy was not from this area. They were saying, I had literally no idea that this man was not American. And that is just like testament to just like how they've chosen what they're dealing with here. You know, how they've put this together and how they've really very carefully positioned all the pieces on the chessboard, you know?
They've really planted the seeds, haven't they? It's interesting, Andrew Lincoln, because it was a very, very smart choice, because before, and now he's huge, you know, because of this program. He's done virtually nothing else for the last 8 years, it was 7 years. But before, he was in Love Actually, which most people recognize him from. And then before that, which not a lot of people know.
Teachers,
exactly. Yeah. He was in a little UK series, which you know, was not huge at all. A few, you know, it was a very small series, and he was great in it. And I remember watching that, you know, on live, on telly, you know, loved it. So they did a very good job of picking someone who, obviously, they wanted someone who could commit. You know, that was the thing. They needed someone to commit to, because these series, they take over your life, you know. I mean, I remember an interview with Kiefer Sutherland about 24. So, you know, it's basically 9 months of filming and 3 months of prep for the next series. And that's your year. And then it's just, you're just doing that until you're either killed off or you quit, you know. So you think, you kind of have a bit of sympathy for these actors, because it's full on, you know, it must be full on. And I mean, granted, they're only making, what, 16 episodes in a series, not 24. But still,
and they have a mid-season break as well.
They do, but
in Walking
it
Dead,
still must be, you know, there's probably not a lot of time for these actors to go off and do big movies and do other things, and they're committed, you know, they're contracted to these series, and then obviously they either bail out or they get killed off or whatever, and then they go on to do other things, as we said about the most recent, because you said you knew that she was going on to some big film or series or something.
Yeah, I mean, oh God, this is where it's going to get fiddly, guys. So I hope you understand, listeners, that we are dealing with a massive volume of content here.
Yeah, over seven years.
Worth.
Podcast. So, episode one.
So we're going to struggle a little bit here to give you...
I think it's easier just to talk about the characters, isn't it? And the way they sort of dip in and dip out. But you know, we can do it however you want to do it.
No, I think we're going to have to go down that route, Bear. So one of my favourite characters is a guy called Daryl. Daryl Dixon, played by Norman Reedus. Norman Reedus is a little bit older than the other cast members. He's actually an artist in real life. So he's got this sort of interesting sideline to him. Haven't seen him do that many other movies. Saw him do one sci-fi movie on the side.
He was in Blade 2, playing almost exactly just before Walking Dead started, and he was playing almost the same character, like this kind of hot-headed, you know, garage work, mechanic, you know.
Right. Yeah. But I just love this character, you know. He's just, there's just something about him. I just kind of want him to survive indefinitely. Yeah. And he is a survivor, you know. He plays this kind of motorcycle gang kind of character who's spent time out in the woods, like, hunting and trapping. And this interesting sort of, like, calm, moody dynamic to him. But the interesting thing is he always seems to do the right thing. You know, he's quite moralistic.
Yeah.
His brother, in which you meet in the first few seasons, who we lose, I think around about four or five, is kind of the opposite of him. You know, is it Merle?
Merle Dixon. Yeah.
Merle is kind of
played
like
by Michael Rooker, who's a fantastic
actor. Amazing actor.
He's been in so much stuff, and credit to him, because he can play these. He's kind of odd looking chap, isn't he? And he's got an odd voice, and he can do these characters very, very well.
But he's like a bad guy that's a good guy that's a bad guy that's a good guy.
Exactly.
And so you get this kind of so one of the interesting things about The Walking Dead is the difference between good and bad, right and wrong, and good and evil. So the dead aren't necessarily bad. They just are. They're just a living sort of thing that's walking around that just wants food. In one way, you could look at them as the ones that are trying to survive.
Yeah.
They're just trying to keep going. They don't really judge. You know, they just exist.
Yeah.
You know, so are they the good guys or the bad guys? Well, they just kind of are. So you get characters like the Dixon brothers. And it's like seeing a Jekyll and Hyde thing kind of going on, you know. You've got Daryl, who's very, like, softly spoken, but seems to be quite moralistic and wants to do the right thing, and he stands by people. Then you've got Merle, who's kind of like an evil asshole.
Yeah.
But then comes good at the end, and it's this role play between society and right and wrong and making the right decision. So then you take someone like, okay, Rick Grimes. So Rick Grimes, played by Andrew Lincoln, is the main character, who at the beginning is a police officer, right? And so on the side of good. But going through the series, you see him killing people.
Mm-hmm.
Not just the dead, but killing people, making decisions, telling the group, this is what you're going to do, this is what we're going to put an attack in. They put attacks in, commanded by him, on people that not necessarily have done anything wrong to them, like the Saviors. A couple seasons ago, when they meet, they say they're asked by another group of people, can you wipe out these people? We'll give you half of our food. So here's a police officer. So is he on the right side or the wrong side? It's just so fascinating.
Well, here's the thing. So who are good guys in this program? And this is exactly what you're saying, isn't it? And this is going back to my point at the beginning about the, you know, a post-apocalyptic, it's probably the wrong term because it's not apocalypse, essentially, but, you know, post disaster, you know, new world, you know, we've got a new world, and now we've got, you know, sort of new rules. Who's a good guy and who's a bad guy, and how do you define? Because Rick Grimes, we kind of see as a good guy, but he's still, you know, in one of the episodes, Negan kind of says, how are you any different from me? You know, you've killed to survive, and you've killed. And that's a really good point, because, you know, they take what they want. They take the prison and they defend it. You know, going back to Daryl briefly, here's why I think Daryl is one of the best characters I've ever seen on television, ever. And it comes down to one very simple thing. The writers and the director had a plan for Daryl and have this very interesting backstory. And they only give us a tiny fragment of that backstory every season and a half. So most episodes, Daryl's there, and the actor, Norman Reedus, is playing this very sort of tortured, like, bottled up soul, right, of this character that we know has got this interesting backstory, but we don't quite know what it is. And then every, say, I don't know, 10 episodes or something, something will happen, And I remember one so perfectly where his shirt gets ripped off and we see some scars on his back. And he has a bit of an outburst, which we don't see Daryl do ever. And it's to Merle. He's shouting at Merle. And he's basically referencing, like, you know, you watched while my dad beat me, you know, and stuff like that. And it was just a couple of lines of dialogue that just gave us such a glimpse into their past. And it was acted just so wonderfully that I was weeping at it. Mm. And then nothing, you know. And then we go back to the Daryl we know, this quiet, sort of subdued loner. And you think of the discipline that takes, you know, of the actor and the director and the writers. Because the writers and the director have come to Norman Reedus and said, look, here's your story, right? And this is the character and this is the character development. But you can't release any of this information until you get your big scene two seasons down the line. So from now until then, you've got to kind of bottle it up and wait till you get to that point to keep everyone intrigued of what's this guy's story. And then eventually we let you off the leash and you have these few lines of dialogue that make us go, holy crap, what's happened to this guy, you know? And then they bottle it up again, and then a couple more seasons go by and it happens again, you know? And then Merle obviously bites the dust and we have a few more little moments there. And it's just like the discipline that must take to tell the story over such a long period, you know? We know probably about 5 lines of text about Daryl over 7 series, you know? But those 5 lines have been so interesting, you know, and it kept us intrigued all the way through.
Well, they're playing the long game, but the only thing that scares the shit out of me is what happens if the bloody studio cancels the contract or something. Because I don't want it to happen is this horrible sort of Firefly situation where you're madly into something and then the bastards cut it. And then you're like, and we never get resolution. So it's like, it's a good game, but it slightly terrifies me.
It is. And it's something I'd like to get into again at the end because it comes into sort of where it's going and the future predictions and stuff. But let's come back to that because I've got a few things to say about that.
I've got a couple of ideas as well. So hopefully your listeners understand that this series does actually originally come from a comic book.
Yeah.
And as we know from things like Marvel, comic books can generate some really interesting, amazing ideas when they're done and adapted to cinema or to TV or film. Well, you've got an amazing resource at your fingertips for the story and the ideas and the characters. But inevitably, sometimes you have to veer off a little bit because it won't work exactly like the book did. Mm. That's just kind of how it goes. It doesn't translate that well. So there's been a couple of times where I know they've had to keep a character on longer because it's been going so well. They've chosen to make different decisions. So
who did they do that to? Do you know?
Well, yeah, I do know who they did that to. So in season one, the other police officer, I just need to find the name of the character. So in season one...
Was it Shane?
Shane.
Yeah.
So Shane's supposed to die much earlier on and they kept him on for much longer because they really like the character. Mm. Shane gets written out quite early on in the comic books and they keep him on for longer.
He's a great character though. And obviously from the series development, he created a very interesting sort of trinity between Rick Grimes' wife, mm-hmm. who obviously the wife had been having not an affair, she thought he was dead, a relationship with, and then obviously they're all back in camping together and now there's a baby and obviously she said before Laurie bit the dust that she said she doesn't know, it could be Shane's, it could be, but there's no way of knowing in this new world, and Rick's obviously going to bring up the baby as it is, but it was an interesting pyramid of disaster for a couple of series, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, Shane, Rick and Laurie, and then the son is caught up somewhere in there,
Carl,
as well.
Yeah. Carl. Yeah, so okay, so here it is, right? I'll be honest with you, there was a couple of moments in the early days of Walking Dead before they kind of really found their tempo and their pace and their cadence of how they do things, where it was a couple of times it was a little bit like Zombie Hollyoaks.
Oh man, that's a great reference.
Do you know what I mean? Zombie, so there's this Hollyoaks. Great character called Carol.
Yeah.
And Carol in the early episodes, well, she's always been married, she had a daughter, but in the early series there was a couple of times where it was her and her husband and it was a little bit like Zombie Hollyoaks, yeah. Where it was just a bit like, oh, come on, stop doing the washing down by the river and I want to see fucking zombies, you know. But I think that was just until they found their sort of tempo. Do you know what I mean? Now it's totally established. I'm totally down with it and it just works every time. But it feels like they were, I guess, trying to find their feet. I mean, bearing in mind, they were breaking in territory that hadn't really been broken in the length of timeline in this kind of story. You know, this, like I said at the start of the podcast, we're used to doing real tight films of an hour and a half, you know, packaged up nice and neatly. So we're kind of like in new territory here. So I guess they kind of had to feel, well, okay, who's watching?
Well, I've got some very interesting trivia for you about away, this man. Exact thing, and I think I've found the solution for you.
Hook me up.
There's a guy called, I think his name is Frank Darabont. I don't have my phone in front of me. But basically, he was initially the developer of this program. He bought it from the comic to the TV screens, if you like. And he was responsible for the first series and part of the second series. Now, he was quite famously fired from the TV network because the TV network didn't like the way he was taking the series. So the TV network fired him and he was out very, very abruptly, because there's actually lots of interviews with the cast from that time, which I've spent weeks on YouTube watching and stuff like this, all sort of saying, like, one day it was all sort of friendly, happy families, and then the next day we all find out that our sort of friend for the last couple of years has been fired off the series that we've been working on, and we don't really know why, but we're all still employed, and we don't know what's happening. And then obviously they sort of trundled on and found their way, and no one really knew why this guy was fired, but the reports are is the fact that the TV network had full control of the series and they didn't like the way he was taking it, and they wanted to take it off and different. Now, by the looks of it, this was around the sort of mid of series two. Uh-huh. And so, judging by what you're saying, it's probably around the same sort of time where they had the sort of series and a half to find their feet, and then they went off with strength, you know, into series three, and they knew exactly what they were doing. Now, here's an interesting thing about this, right? So the actor that played Dale, do you remember the character Dale?
Yes.
Who was the old Winnebago driver?
Yes.
He was really good friends with Frank Darabont. When he got fired, he said, "I want out. I quit. If you're going to fire him, then I quit." So they said, okay. So they wrote him his death scene. Over the coming weeks before they shot the death scene, all the cast had said to Dale, the actor that played Dale, "You really don't want to quit this. Like, this is going to be a really good show. There's going to be years of this in it for you, you know." And then he had second thoughts and went back and said, "Actually, I've had second thoughts. I don't want to quit now." And they said, "We've spent too much money writing your death and sort of preparing for the death sequence, and that's obviously around the corner. We've got to do it. I'm afraid you're out." So he then begrudgingly got killed off, even though by that point he actually wanted to stay in.
Yeah.
And this is all because this original sort of concept developer got fired off the show. It's a very interesting. I'd love to know more about that story, because I read all this over a sort of different pages of interviews from different cast members, and I found it all very, very quite interesting. And just going back to what you were saying about, like, finding its feet and, you know, Zombie Hollyoaks, it felt like maybe that was the reason. You know, maybe he was taking it the wrong direction, the TV network, that, no, we need to do this, and we need to do that, and we need him gone.
Do you know, interesting fact, okay, so when they're filming, the zombies, the noises are not made on set, they're added in post-production.
Yeah, I would guess that, yeah.
So do you not find that interesting from an acting point of view, because you've got this silent thing,
yeah,
getting into character, right?
I think,
because I find the sound so menacing, kind of thing is just what we rely on it so much.
I think having worked a little bit in that field, I'm kind of used to the fact that I know how much sound in anything, in any film or TV series, is added in post. In some respects, a lot of dialogue is re-added, because you think, if you're shooting a big sequence outside and you've got one microphone above your head, and these obviously long sequences of thousands of zombies, there's not going to be mics on all of them, you know. And even in situations where you're trying to pick up a quiet bit of, there's a lot of, you know, quiet dialogue in The Walking Dead like this, because they don't want to alert anyone, you know. And you think, in a lot of situations like that, they have to go back and redo dialogue. So it's interesting, but it's going to make it more menacing by doing it that way, because they can obviously run effect on it and make it sound exactly the way. They're just extras at the end of the day, those zombies, aren't they? They're just yes. They're just extras, just made up to look like, you know, the zombies. So I guess they just do what they're told, and then they just copy and paste the sounds in later.
Okay, do you have a favourite episode of The Walking Dead?
That's a very good one. I think it's tricky, because I think for shock factor, it definitely has to be the Negan episode.
Really? What about the death of Rick's wife?
Nah.
With the delivery of the baby.
Nah. I have to admit fully, I could not stand Laurie. I wanted her to die from the first second I saw her. And I told my wife, Lottie, I said, series two, I wanted to call that series Bitch Please. Because so many times through that series, there's stupid arguments going on between her and Andrea and then Herschel's children, Maggie and Beth. And just so many conversations, I'm just like, Bitch Please, sit down. Because there were so many incidents that happened during series two that were because of Laurie's meddling. But I'm glad when she died. So no. I think due to shock factor, I think
the Bear has spoken.
The Negan episode, just because obviously having to wait from, you know, so obviously the episode I'm talking to about listeners is at the end of series six, we meet Negan and they're in a line and it's looking pretty bleak. You know,
just explain who Negan is.
Negan is like the ultimate villain. Obviously we know this if we watched it, but he's the one sort of running the show essentially. He's a big bully, basically. He's gained control over several camps and several parties. He makes them do what he wants, and he makes them do it by out of fear, by killing people and torturing people until they do what he wants. He's basically just a big bully with a baseball bat, but he's a very, very good villain. And we meet him at the end of series six in a very, very fantastic way. And obviously all the good guy, quote marks, good guys essentially are in a sort of looking pretty bleak, and he's going to kill one of them. He can't decide who to pick, and he does a sort of eeny, meeny, miny, moe with his baseball bat. And then it's a great camera angle because he hits someone over the head, but the camera is obviously from the person he's hit perspective, so we don't know who he's hit, and then the series ends, and then we have to wait 6 months until we find out. But then the next episode, whew, the next one, you know, when we find out who he's killed with the baseball bat, and then Daryl gets angry, has a little pop, and then just out of the blue he kills Glenn, and Glenn's been in it from episode one,
yeah,
and that hurt. It probably hurt him more than it hurt me, but it hurt emotionally, and it was very sad. And obviously they did it in such a ludicrous way, with his pretty much his head exploding and his eye popping out. But it was a shocking episode. I don't know if it's my favourite, but there's a few sort of great moments. The other one I think was always great was, I think, the moment where Carol's daughter emerges out of the barn on Herschel's farm after, I think it was the end of that series or right before the end of that series.
Yep.
But obviously we spent that whole series looking for, is it Amy, her daughter's name?
I can't remember. It's such a long time ago.
They spend the whole series looking for Carol's daughter. Let's call her Amy. And then we find out that she's a zombie and she's been in the barn the whole time. And that was a great, the way they shot that. And then obviously what happened after with Rick sort of stepping up, shooting her, to prove to Herschel, look, she's not alive.
I think that's that scene is when you, I think when you sort of start to realise what you're really dealing with in this TV series. That moment where you're like, these writers are not afraid to do this to children.
Yeah.
And if they need to tell that as the story to show you this side of what's, you know, to shock you in a way that's not like, you know, I'm not talking about like Saw and films like that. No. That kind of, oh, the shock factor. It's not that kind of thing. It's not The Hostel.
Because it doesn't need to be. It's about the thought, isn't it? It's the thought of, it doesn't need to be like sawing people's arms off. It's sinister. It's just negative. Yeah. It's just like,
it's a
really sad story.
It's a more potent form of holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, talking about, you know, they're not afraid of doing that to kids. Let's talk about the scene a few series later where Carol,
I know what you're gonna,
man, oh, alive, that was a full-on episode.
Yeah,
let's I can't remember the guy's name. What was the
black actor? Yeah, yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, I can't remember. It's not Morgan. I want to talk about Morgan in a minute.
So Carol and this other guy are with these two kids that they've rescued, and then she, the older sister, stabs the younger sister to death because she's trying to prove that these zombies are people and she can tame them and she can teach them. And then it's like, oh my god, that is really dark and really twisted. And then obviously Carol has no choice but to kill the other one. So she's had to witness two young children dying, and as well as her own daughter a few series behind. I mean, oh man, I love Carol.
She's one of the best characters who you think at the start of it, you think, oh, I'll just hurry up and die already.
Nah.
And then it just all goes this other way.
She turns it to Rambo, and then it's just like, oh.
Yeah. Okay, so my favourite episode, I've been trying to find the goddamn thing. Oh, Bear, I couldn't find it. Okay, so my favourite episode of The Walking Dead is one that has almost none of The Walking Dead in it and none of the main characters, but it generated the biggest emotional reaction in me.
Is it the Morgan episode?
Yeah, where he's...
Where he's being trained.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good episode.
Yeah. Morgan is this character who we meet in season one and disappears with his son, and we don't see for years.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden comes back into The Walking Dead. And I called it, man. I said years ago, I'm sure this guy, he's too good to not come back.
I think the rule with The Walking Dead is if you don't see anyone, if you don't see them die, they're going to come back. You know, they always have done. And I mean, the thing is, we had that one episode with Morgan, didn't we, halfway through?
Mm-hmm.
Must have been about series 3 or 4
mm-hmm.
when he
had lost his son
and he'd lost his mind, didn't he? And he'd just gone mental. And
yep.
But again, I said the same thing to Lottie, because I said, like, we've not seen him die and we've not seen him turn. Yep. So in theory, continue, please.
But my favourite episode of all time is this one season where he gets sort of, I won't say taken prisoner, but he just ends up with this guy who's like a kind of a Tai Chi, kind of like Zen master guy who just has this lovely little place in the woods, and the inn sort of temporarily sort of imprisons Morgan, but in a way of rehabilitating him. And the whole episode is really just these two people just talking about life and death and getting Morgan like back on track and teaching him what's the value of society and what are we going to do now and how do we have to be and should we kill or should we not kill and why, here's why we don't kill, you know, and all these amazing things happen. And then at the very end of the episode, he's just trying to, Morgan's still sort of slightly suffering from this PTSD thing he's got with his death of his son, and seizes up for a moment, he goes to take out a walker and it doesn't happen, and this guy steps in the way to save his life and ends up getting scratched or bitten or whatever. And so this really important guy who I thought, oh my god, he's an amazing character, he'll be here forever more, he's going to be this, he gets killed, he dies of it. So
he must have been so disappointed, that actor, didn't he? He must have gone home, told his family, oh my god, I went to an audition, I got the part in The Walking Dead, oh my god, that's great. Oh, only in one episode though.
But it just, that whole episode just, it just showed me that these guys got this way of writing and telling a story and doing it. And just in this one episode where you've got the most simple setup, you know, just, we need just a small building in the woods with a little bit of land beside it. That's it.
Yeah.
And a goat.
It's an interesting, yeah, the goat.
That's it.
It's interesting you mentioned that the story writing, because the interesting thing I've seen about this series away from every other series I've watched is they have a really fascinating way of taking you away from the main. You have a main plot line that runs through it, through the, say, 16 episodes. You have a main plot of, you know, let's say...
the big goal is to find somewhere that's safe, establish a community.
And we have the main
and story. Deal with something, and deal with the thing that's challenging that. It's kind of the whole
way. And then in every series, about halfway through the series, one episode will end with a big cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You know, for example, when they fake Glenn's death.
Mm-hmm.
So Glenn falls into a thing of zombies. We see intestines being pulled out and the screen goes black and everyone loses their minds.
Mm-hmm.
But then the next episode doesn't follow on from that story. They have this interesting way of taking you away and then telling you a really random story like this Morgan episode. And they've done it in every series, if you've noticed. They've just sort of interrupted the sort of main plot line to tell you, say, where a character's been for the last couple of days in one episode. So they did it in, I think, series 4. Was it Woodburn?
Or Terminus? Which one?
No, the one the governor ran.
I think that was Woodbury, wasn't it?
Woodbury.
Yeah.
So one of the series, I think that was series 3 or 4, we're introduced to Woodbury, a small town that's run by the governor. We find out that the governor's a fairly sinister character, and without going into way too much detail, eventually there's a bit of a war between the prison with the good guys and Woodbury with the governor. And
mate, there's a fucking tank. It's more than just a bit of a war. Full on.
And obviously everyone dies except for the governor. He disappears, and then we go I don't know, halfway into the next series where they're all happily living out their life in the prison, and then he shows up, the governor. But then the next episode is his backstory,
yeah,
or what he's been doing for the last few months. And it's a really interesting way, and it's even more noticeable when you watch it like I did, like binge watch it episode after episode. It must be so infuriating if you're watching it week by week, because you get to a really big cliffhanger and then you go, oh, I've got to wait a week for the reveal of that. And then you don't. You have to wait two or three, mm-hmm, because they're telling this other story. And yep, this Morgan episode you're describing was one of those. And I can't remember the cliffhanger that led into it, but it was one of these episodes that sort of took you away from the main plot. And I think it's a very interesting thing they do, a very interesting way of doing it. Yeah. Just a thought.
Has anyone in The Walking Dead, any character at any time, actually said the word zombie?
No, famously, they've never been referred to as zombies. They've been walkers, called to many else. Things, lame brains, walkers.
Yeah.
But never zombie.
Biters was another one.
Yeah. If you go on IMDb trivia, it lists all the things they've been called, and it makes a point of saying never zombie though.
Yeah.
You know.
Because you have to, this is what I love about this genre, is that you always have to start at the same point. Normal world. See, if we had zombies now, me and you would know exactly what to do.
Yeah, exactly.
We are well briefed in this subject, yeah, sir. We would survive this damn thing.
Well, I don't know. We'd have a good idea, but you know, it'd be a challenge. We'd know where to go, what weapons to take.
Yeah.
Michonne's sword.
Yeah.
That would be a good shout. Yeah. You know, it's long.
Yeah.
Hopefully she'd still be attached to it. Yeah. You know.
What is the number one rule of survive? Okay, listeners, okay, get ready to hit pause, okay? Think about this one. What is the number one rule of surviving a zombie apocalypse, of surviving zombies? So listeners, hit pause, think of your answer, and then we'll tell you what I think the answer is.
But I need to think about it as well. Well, have you got an answer?
Yeah, of course I have.
Well, you go first then. Number one rule.
I'm the fucker who came up with the question.
I think I just get...
The number one rule...
Just far away. Just,
of I don't know. Surviving a zombie...
Probably just try and sleep.
No. You're vulnerable sleeping.
I'm obviously just joking. I don't know. You go.
Okay.
I need time to think.
The number one rule is that you have to protect your personal space. Because if there's nothing around to bite you, you won't get bitten.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to protect your personal space.
But then what's stopping someone like the governor or Negan coming and taking your personal space?
Exactly.
Because the thing that made that prison war episode so infuriating was that I felt just so sorry for them, you know? I was just like, he's a maniac, this guy. And he's just like, I want what they've got. I want it. You know, he's like, I'm going to take it. And he's convinced, he's recruited all these people. He's manipulated situations to get them on his side so then they can go and break into this prison. And I just think, oh, but you're going to destroy it so no one can use it. And so coming back to your point, you know, what if you got some asshole that came up with a tank and shot your house down? No one can enjoy it then.
Exactly.
Then you have no personal space.
But the thing, I like what you did there. But the thing to remember is that they are as vulnerable to the bite as you are. So the level playing field exists for them as well, because they can get bitten too. They can get scratched. They can get bitten. And so can the good guys, and so can the bad guys. And so it's a level playing field that everyone's up against. You know,
yeah.
Everyone faces the same foe. And zombies, as we said, they're not prejudiced. It doesn't matter if you're black, white, Asian, run really fast, don't run fast at all. If you're a horse, they get eaten too. You know, these fuckers, it's not prejudiced to anything. You know?
I mean, I have to say, the episode where we reintroduced to Morgan halfway through, mm-hmm, so the one we just referred to, not the one where he's lost his mind and he's in the town.
Where he's clearing.
Yeah, and Michonne and Rick stumble across him. That's actually a really good idea of what he did there. He created this big old sort of street of booby traps, you know, mm-hmm, big spikes and
yep,
barbed wire.
Yep.
Good plan from Morgan, but it's a shame he was a mental case.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So would you rather be in the woods or would you rather be in a town, a small town, if you were doing
this? It's difficult. I've asked this to Lottie a few times, because the problem with being in a town is that a town will always be more populated.
Yes.
So there'll be more...
Which is the risk factor.
There'll be more zombies initially, you know. But then in a woods, there's less stuff there, you know. So it's finding a balance. I honestly think, man... Yeah, go on.
Well, I think the game of this is that you're constantly faced with a risk-reward scenario. So okay, supplies, town equals supplies, but town equals more people, in which more zombies equals the greater risk. Woods, no zombies, okay, no resources, but you know, now you're playing the hunter situation. This is why you need the Dixons of this world, you know, who can track, who can trap, who can, you know, fire a bow and arrow. So I don't know, I just find it interesting. I don't think I've met anyone yet that's watched any decent number of episodes of this series and hasn't had a conversation about, okay, what would you do? Would you go for your family? Would you help mum?
That's the beauty of it, man. That's the beauty of this series. Because, you know, I watch 24 and I think, yeah, it's entertaining, but I'm not going, when I'm a CTU agent running around.
When I'm in the airport, when the Russians, you know, this kind of thing.
You're not doing that, but you could, I mean, obviously zombies, it's fictional, yes, but you could, but it's a lot of fun to just sit and go, oh, what would I do though? I honestly think where I live now is pretty good for this situation because it's not that densely populated. So I think I could kill off quite a lot of those zombies. There's a big supermarket just up the road. So if I killed off all the zombies, the survivors could pitch together. We could raid that supermarket for a good few years. You know, we'd be all right. Mm-hmm. I honestly think where I live is pretty safe.
Well, this is actually covered in the George A. Romero lineage of zombie movies. If we wind on to, I think it's either Dawn of the Dead or Day of the Dead, I get the two mixed up. But one of them is specifically set in a big shopping centre.
Right.
And what they do in that scenario is they take big, what do we call them? With the trailer, what do we call that? Trucks and trailer, what's that? On the motorway, what are they?
Caravan.
Lorries.
Oh, lorry.
So they take a bunch. So what they do is they go to a big, huge kind of shopping centre and they get a bunch of lorries and they block up all of the glass front, all of the doors with lorries, with, you know, trucks and trailers. So you've got this barrier. Then they get into the shopping centre, they clear out all the zombies from there, and then for a good long time they live on the resources, exactly like you just described. Now, what do you think is the problem that causes them the biggest issue at the end of that movie?
Well, they run out.
Nope, no, it's not that.
People want what they've got.
Exactly.
But it's exactly the same as the situation we're talking about with the prison, isn't it? Because that was a really good... Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, so what happens is you get this biker gang that comes down that sees all this, and of course they're just this roaming, marauding biker gang of evil guys that are just living off the land and killing people, and they don't care about anything apart from themselves. So they move the lorries, and then you get a huge battle in the shopping centre, and then they have to flee and all this kind of stuff. So it's that risk reward situation. So I like your idea of holding up in your local Sainsbury's, mate. That's a good one, but watch out because
well, this is the interesting point, isn't it? Because later on, towards the end of The Walking Dead, when we're introduced to one of Negan's men, it wasn't Negan's men, it was one of the Terminus men, it was one of the cannibals. He was saying to one of them, he said, good guys don't survive. You know, good guys don't survive this world because you've got to be a little bit bad to survive, as we established before. You know, you've got to make some tough decisions, you know, shoot people, kill people. You've got to take what you fought for. And he said in one of the episodes, you know, this is why you'll die before me. And he said this to one of the good characters. And in the end, he was right because he did die. I can't remember that character's name, that big black guy who saved the baby.
Yeah.
With Carol.
I know.
Is it Tyrese,
there you go.
And this bad guy, essentially, the one of the Terminus cannibals, says to Tyrese exactly that. He just says, good guys don't survive, bad guys survive, and that's why we've survived, and that's why you'll die before me. And he did.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because I think that's the other thing you start to think. If you were in this world, would you be... Obviously, we all try to live by a kind of...
Well, moral compass of some kind.
Exactly. We all try and live right. You know, we do the we know the difference between right and wrong. But you think, well, if you were in that situation, would you turn or would you stay a good person or a bad... And what would define you as a good person? And if you were that much of a good person, you probably wouldn't survive very long because you wouldn't be able to make the decision that someone else probably would just have no problem just popping you to take what's yours, you know? It's really interesting, but... We're a little off topic.
Oh, I love it. But this is what I love about Walking Dead. It does make you chat about the kind of shit you'd never normally talk about. I mean, it's a hell of a conversation starter. Okay, so how do you like your zombies? Do you like your 28 Days Later zombie?
Yeah.
Do you? Man. I don't.
I have to say, well, yeah, what do you mean by like? I mean,
you'd never be bored.
They're the worst ones. I mean, I have to say, I love this show, but I do think the zombies are a little rubbish. And I think they get a bit like, they're just a little bit crap, aren't they? And I often think there's a lot of sequences where it's like, there's sort of Austin Powers-esque, oh, I fell over with the zombie. You know, I just think in reality, you wouldn't do that. There's a lot of artistic license. They're trying to make it look a lot worse than it is. And these zombies, they move at like, you know, really slowly. They're gargling away. You think you could easily kill them a lot more easily than you're doing.
I think that if they were like that, you'd hear them coming.
Yeah.
Okay, which is good because you'd want to hear them coming because that's your best sense of defense, you know, seeing them and hearing them. But of course, we need to make people jump, you know. It's that thing of, you know, we all like a good roller coaster, don't we? We like to jump. We like to be a little bit afraid. So you need to do that in a series like this. Things coming out of you from the darkness or behind cupboard doors or what have you.
Yeah.
So yeah, but personally, I do like my zombies, the slow moving type, the ones in 28 Days Later that can fucking sprint.
Well, World War Z, yeah, and they can climb a building.
They can jump. They're like fucking parkour zombies. Hell no.
They're easier to maintain when they're like this. So, and obviously, I like the scenes when they're at the prison where they go out for their daily, you know, forking through the metal barriers. You know, just kill off the few hundred that have come in this morning. That's your morning job's done. The morning workout. We should probably talk about the last series, you know,
right, okay.
as it's most recent and things like that. I also want to ask you because...
Go on. So the last series, Rick submits to Negan and decides, okay, I'll sign up for this. Negan is more powerful, he's got more men, he's got more resources. And then inevitably, we know it's going to come. There's going to be a falling out between Rick and those guys. And the saviors, all right? So Rick does the unthinkable and goes and meets up with the scavengers.
Oh.
And talks to the leader of this woman, leader of the scavengers.
She is the weirdest character.
Right. Okay, so let me ask you this question.
In this program.
When you were watching that season where he's making a deal with this woman, right? Was it just me or is everyone else shouting at the TV, Rick, she is crazier than a shithouse rat?
She is the weirdest character that they've done, and she talks like Yoda. Yeah, I don't know what her name is. She. I mean,
just how quickly would you be making a deal over the life and death with this woman?
Well, it was interesting the last series, and this was going to be my question to you because the last series was a bit strange. I felt, and I don't think it was as good as previous series. I don't know why, but they're just something. They seem to lose something, and it seemed convenient to me that suddenly. Because I said to Lottie, I said, we've met Negan, and obviously the way out, because they're not just going to do now a series of him working for Negan. There's going to be a resolve, and obviously that resolve is going to be he's going to try and win back. He's going to try and fight back and get back what he wants, you know. So there's going to ultimately be a war. And we said basically right on off about episode 1-2, we said, but they're outnumbered. So I'm assuming now this series is going to be them meeting new groups of people that they're going to try and recruit, and each group of people is going to have a different thing they need. You know, they met the sea bound people with all the guns, and they met the saviors who had no guns but they had all the people, you know, who were all willing to
the scavengers, you mean?
No, the hilltop.
Oh, the hilltop. Led by George Mason. Yeah. Oh, God.
We love George.
Happy
Mason.
About that.
Yeah. When I saw his name come up, I was like, Xander Berkeley. His name is for the listeners.
You're like, oh yes, please.
I was like, George Mason was his character name in 24.
Oh, yeah.
What a brilliant actor he is. I mean, he's not a very nice man in this, but he's a brilliant actor, and he's been in so much, and he's always fantastic, and he's always like a secondary, you know, secondary like third character. Just, he's excellent.
Yeah, I'm delighted to see him too.
But yeah, so in this series, we have this kind of recruitment, you know, which is the way it's going, because they're trying to recruit this army, essentially, to fight Negan. And it kind of kicks off at the end, and it's obviously going to carry over into the next series. And it ends with Negan sort of saying, right, we're going to war. And that's where the next series is going to take us. But this last series has had a dramatic fall in viewing figures.
Right.
And ratings and things like this. So why do you think that is? Or do you have a theory?
I don't have a theory. I don't know what everyone's fucking whinging about, to be honest with you. I really don't. I mean, you started the thing with two main characters getting killed, right? So big kickoff, yeah. You know, and then you've got all these new people cropping up. You've still got your zombies. You've got this really the best bad guy we've ever had. What the fuck are people worrying about? What's wrong with these people?
I agree. And I would like to add to that. When I watched the finale, I thought the finale was great. You know, I really enjoyed it. And everyone's slagging it off on Facebook, Twitter. And I'm like, from a finale of a series, that's pretty much what I want. Because if it didn't, I have to say, you know, I binged that 7 series, you know, over the course of 6 weeks. You know, I didn't have to wait week by week for anything. But now I'm waiting. Now I'm waiting for series 8. But if series 7 had ended like series 6, man, I would have been pissed off. I would have been really pissed off. If I'd watched all that and got to that point where I was like, so I'm not even going to find out who's died. You know, I actually thought that series 7 kind of ended on a sort of, not a positive note, but it gave us a clue as to what's going to happen. It had some element of resolve, you know, in the sense that we know what we've got to do now. You know, they know what they're going to do. They're getting on with it, and Negan's getting on with it, and I like the fact that there was no big kind of cliffhanger. It did have an ending.
Well, talking of endings, okay, so I will come out and say now that I have not read the comic book series, mm-hmm. and I have no intention of reading them. But I am aware from a good friend of mine who is really up on comic books that The Walking Dead does, in the comic books, come to an end.
Right.
There is an end of this thing.
Now, you said this to me the other day on the phone, and I wanted to double check because I read something the other day that seemed to suggest that it hadn't, that it's continuing. But it's one source, and that might have been done a few years ago. But I'm just saying that before we put that out on the podcast, we may need to check because I saw something that.
But I'm too scared to look in case I see the end.
I know, that's the problem.
Shit.
Maybe someone could just tell us.
Can someone come on the Facebook page and just don't tell us what happened? Yeah, just say yes or no.
Just email me.
Yeah, just let us know.
podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Just tell us if it's ended. But the thing is. Here's the problem, isn't it? It's ending it because at some point they're going to have to end this.
Well, the closest we've ever been in the zombie genre to some kind of what I thought could be an ending was very, very early on when the story took us to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. And I thought, fuck me, for once, are we actually about to have a glimmer of hope here where we might actually have some thing that could do this? And of course that was written out nice and early on, so that
brings up one of the points that I was telling you right before we hit record on this video that I watched about one of the main problems of this show, because apparently the writers and the creators of the show have come out now and said we really regret dialogue we wrote in that last episode of series 1, basically where we've given everyone the virus. Mm-hmm. So every, you know, it's ominous as hell because it just means so there's no cure. We know there's no cure because they confirmed it in the CDC, and we know that every single person's got it. So whatever happens, when you die, you're going to become one of them unless they stab you in the head. So, and the creators have now come back now and said, we really regret that because obviously from an ending point of view, what can they do now? Because they've kind of put the nail in their own coffin, as it were, you know, with a pun, because they can't now introduce a cure because they've already said that there wasn't one, and they can't now make it so that, like, mm-hmm. oh, Rick all this time was actually, that's just reminding me of something that I think I was told about the comics, but I won't say it because I know you don't want to know.
I don't want to know.
But maybe I can't put it on the Facebook group either. That's really annoying. Okay, whatever.
Okay, so I have two predictions for possible endings for the series, okay? So one prediction is the writers will write their way out of the problem you just said. So this thing where, oh, we regret writing about the da-da-da-da in this early season, they'll just write their way around it.
And they'll Dallas and just say it was just a dream.
Yeah, they'll find the resolution for it, which means they can close the whole thing down and give it some kind of weird happy ending. Okay, option one. Option two, I think what they could do is do a fast forward. So you never really see any of the main characters completely dying. What it does is it fast forwards to 30 years in the future. Carl has grown up and he's now Rick, and you see him just, you know, all the other characters imply they've just passed away just through natural old age, and now he's a new society, he's the leader of this, he's see him as an older character, and then he doesn't die, he just sort of gives it a nice sunset kind of fade kind of thing, and now we've rebuilt society, and
he's that, here with Judith.
Yeah, that's kind of another way I see it going.
Yeah, I mean that's a very picturesque way. I don't feel that's the way they'll go with The Walking Dead, because I think it's too...
What do you mean it's not going to be like The Sound of Music?
I mean, I would like to see some other part of the world, you know? Because, again, in this video I watched, they were sort of saying it would be interesting to see... Obviously, everything's sort of centred very locally. It's all centred in Georgia, and it's all centred around sort of, you know, probably 100 square miles, you know? So we've not seen any other part of America. There was a talk at one point about going to Washington, D.C., which I think they sort of did in an episode, didn't they, and then drove back.
Didn't get very far. Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see sort of another city or another, you know, area like that, or another country even, you know? What's happened to... Is it worldwide, or is it just America? Is it in Europe, you know? Have people managed to fly away and sort of set up, you know... It would be interesting to just broaden out a little bit and just see what's going on. There was an interesting thing I read from the... I think it was, again, from the Frank Darabont guy, the guy that got fired. What he originally wanted to do was through each series, he wanted to have sort of random episodes about no one that we knew. For example, the example they gave is, if you think back to the first episode where Rick Grimes gets in a tank,
mm-hmm.
you remember, and he gets attacked by mm-hmm. the soldier zombie that's mm-hmm. in the tank.
Yep.
And then they said, what would be interesting is to then, in a couple of episodes' time, tell a story about that soldier and forget about Rick Grimes for one episode, forget about all our characters, and just tell a story about him waking up, going to work, he dies, becomes a zombie, and how does he get to that point, you know? And the idea was to do sort of random episodes like that throughout. And I think, well, you could do that, and you could do it from other parts of America and the world to tell different bits of the story.
Yeah.
I'd quite like to see that, you know, definitely.
Would this be as a sort of a spin-off thing?
Well, there is actually a spin-off series already that I forget what it's called.
There is. I haven't watched one of them.
No, I haven't. But apparently it's quite good. A few of my friends have watched it, and they say it's actually quite good. I might see if I can get my hands on it and watch it. Because there's a little spin-off thing going on. But I don't know. I think the universe is an interesting one. And it's like what we say. It's like they have problems with... We've got our sort of core cast members, and they're scheduled for as long as they're scheduled, and they'll survive for as long as they want to do it, really, and as long as we keep watching them. But at the end of the day, they'll probably all get killed off eventually, and, you know, they might be all new characters. But it would just be interesting to see a different perspective on it, you know? Because if this is the universe they've created, right, we're in the Walking Dead universe, everyone's got this virus, most people are dead, and then we've got little groups of survivors. Let's see some of the other groups of survivors, you know, but away from Rick Grimes and how other people are dealing with it. Because if you did that, it could potentially go on forever if people continue to watch it.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah. It's the question is, do we want resolution?
Yeah.
Or do we want it to just roll on and on and on?
I don't feel like The Walking Dead is a particularly resolution type series. I don't think we'll ever get... I think when they decide to call it a last series, I don't think we'll get a resolution. I think we'll get a walking off down the road looking for a new place to survive, and then we decide what happens to them. Because I've seen series like that end like that, you know? They don't have a, and now we're all fine, you know? It's more of a, this was a window into their lives, and now it stops, and their lives are going to continue, and we can imagine whatever it is they get up to next.
Oh, you know? God, I don't even know what I want more. I really don't. I don't know which way. I kind of, in a way, slightly want a little bit of... I tell you what would be good. It would be a little bit more of science in there, like the CDC thing.
Yeah.
To find another thing, another glimmer of hope that gives a scientific outlet to understanding why and what. And that would be great. But I don't know if we're going to ever get that again.
I mean, I did get excited when we met Eugene.
Yeah.
And, because I thought there it was, I actually kind of thought
there's something here.
So that was a plot line in series 4 or 5 when we meet some new characters, and we're going on the basis that he's saying we're on a mission to get to Washington DC. I know what the cure is, blah blah blah. And I thought it would be great if that happens. And you know, I kind of knew he's either full of shit or they're all going to die and it's not going to happen anyway. And then, you know, but that was kind of, I just thought it would be interesting for them to take this story to Washington DC and see if there was this sort of bunker, you know, more people working on some sort of solution like the CDC, because I kind of like that episode.
I know.
And I wanted more of it.
That's one of the things I'd like, a little bit more of that part of the story, if I had my way.
I'm disappointed that he blew that up. Literally, the end of the same episode we see it, it's gone. And I'm like, oh.
I could have done a bit more time.
I could have done a series there. You know? I could have done a series of that story.
Yeah, I know. He said he blew the bloody windows out on, like, I'm like, dude.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
did we really have to?
Yeah.
So yeah, that slightly hurt me. I could do with another one of those. I don't know if we're going to get it. It's not really the way that the writing seems to be going. Like you say, the closest flirtation we had with that was the Eugene scenario.
Yeah.
And that got taken away from us.
Although I have to say, I'm kind of more, I'm enjoying his plot line, his storyline now, as the sort of good guy gone bad. He's such a wimp that he's just gone, I am Negan. That was brilliant. You know, I am Negan. I am completely, wholeheartedly Negan. And I was like, oh, and now he's working for him. And I just think, you know, that's a really interesting twist, you know, because obviously you don't see good guys go bad often. And it depends how bad he'll go.
I think he's got something on the way.
Well, so do I, because there was obviously the hint at the end of the last episode, wasn't there? Because
he may have displeased Negan.
He made the tablet that he gave to Sasha, leading to her demise. And Negan's onto him because he said, how did she die? So Eugene might still have a moment of brilliance in him.
I wonder if Eugene's going to get a punishment. You know, like the doctor did?
Yeah, with the iron on the face and stuff.
Yeah.
But he's not going to do it until he knows, because he's not going to. He can't suspect, is he? Can he?
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to happen. It's like Eugene's kind of in a karmic way. Is kind of owed that a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think that
drown him in a big jar of pickles.
I don't know. You don't know with Negan. He's unpredictable, which is what I like about him. You don't know who's going to get shot next. But The Walking Dead's always been like that. I think that's one of the sort of the allures of the series, is no one's really safe. You know, it's very hard to be safe. And as soon as you start, as soon as Shane bit the dust, I thought, okay, well, he's like a principal character.
Shane, right, yeah.
Yeah, and then Glenn, and you think, well, these are principal characters, you know. Yeah. I mean, it can pretty much happen to anyone.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
So if no one's safe, this is the problem that Game of Thrones has got itself into. Because now they've got this whole, oh, you know, we can bring Jon Snow back from the dead. Well, now there's no allure in death anymore. We said this in the podcast.
Said it.
Whereas in The Walking Dead, you're dead, you are dead.
Yeah.
Definitely dead. There ain't no coming back from that.
Yeah.
You know, so they still have that charm about them.
Yeah, and generally, most of the time in The Walking Dead, it has been a surprise. You know, when people have been killed off, core members of the cast, it's normally been like, I don't feel like, predictable, you know. I knew that was coming. I knew you said that about Sasha, but
well, you know what's interesting is if the writers came out and said the next season will be the last season done, then I would be thinking to myself, I don't know if Rick's gonna survive.
Yeah,
I don't know. Negan might come out on top. I don't know how this is gonna go.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know if they've said. I don't think they've said that. But you never know.
One thing is for sure, they're gonna keep Negan around for a while, I reckon. Because I mean,
he's amazing.
Even if they go to war, and you know. I'm assuming that Rick will come out on top eventually, because it's, you know, the story's got to be about the kind of good guys kind of winning. If they are the good guys, we've already established we don't know what good is anymore, but we kind of root for them more than others. We're assuming he's going to come back on top, but I think that they'd be stupid. Even if he regained control, I think Negan will escape and disappear like the governor did a few series before, and he'll make an appearance later on.
We've got some big deaths coming up, haven't we? Because, you know, these people I'd like to think they get their comeuppance, but we've got the leader of the scavengers, who I just can't wait for her to fucking get there. How would you like her to die?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even care.
And but, should it involve a tiger?
But then, oh, yeah. But then we also think about, because this is where me and Lottie are really torn on this one, because what about the guy that double-crossed Daryl and tortured Daryl? I don't know his name, but the guy with the ginger hair, the scar. Now, he is a right asshole, you know. When they had the couple of episodes of him, you know, stealing all the, you know, bullying people, you know, he's just a little jumped up little prick, isn't he? You know, stealing all the stuff off people, living in his nice little room. He's torturing Daryl, feeding the dog food, you know. And obviously, they've already met before, where he steals his bike and crossbow, and he says, I can't remember what he says, but Daryl sort of threatens him, doesn't he? And I was saying to Lottie, like, he's going to be the one that we get the most satisfaction out of when he dies. He's going to be like in Game of Thrones when, what's that guy died?
Ramsay.
Yeah. It's when everyone just wants to clap at the screen.
opening beers and stuff.
But then right at the end, it's almost like he's helping them again, and we don't know if he's helping them or if he's still with Negan. He made the little model, and he wrote I didn't know or something on the model, didn't he, to sort of say to Daryl, because Daryl just wants to kill him. Daryl's wanted to kill him many times, and Rick stopped him, and they had him in the prison, and they sort of said, you know, we need to kill this guy, just kill him, you know. Mm-hmm. Rick's keeping him alive because he thinks he's going to be helpful, and we still don't know whether he's kind of going to double cross them or if he is going good, because now he's got nothing to lose, because his missus is gone, isn't she? So he's like, he's done with Negan, and I kind of feel for Daryl. I just feel like he's double crossed you too many times, I've done with him, get rid of him. But Lottie's very much like, no, he's trying to help. But he's one where you just think, I can't wait, he's going to get a death. And when it is, it's going to be spectacular, you know. Same as, I'm assuming Negan, and same as Negan's other mate, other
second the mustache. Part.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
He's a great henchman, isn't he?
He's such an odd looking dude.
I just find that we're very well stocked at the moment for people that we want dead. This is good for us, because this is The Walking Dead, so we want this.
That's true, and a lot of people I've seen saying on sort of social media have said, one would argue that the cast is almost a little bit too big now. You know, we've actually got probably more people than we can deal with in a series.
Well, you know what that means.
Yeah. That means there's a lot of death coming.
That means we're getting ready to trim the herd.
Definitely. Well, that's what we've got to look forward to. I think series 8 starts in October, autumn. First 8 episodes, anyway, comes out in autumn.
Is it?
Yeah. I think we've well and truly done... Well, we've not well and truly done it. We've spoken about it for a long time, but there's characters we've not even mentioned, but...
I know, we've merely stirred the pot. It's a big series.
I guess we could talk for hours on it, but we probably won't, for the sanity of our listeners.
I think we appeal to a lot of guys that listen to the podcast, but would you say to people that this is one to watch with the girlfriend?
Oh, or... yeah. Because
I've always been slightly 50-50 on... I felt in the early series, when they were writing it, when it was a little bit more like Zombie Hollyoaks, that was kind of in there to keep women alongside us, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I watched everything with Lottie, and she enjoyed it just as much as me, you know. And I think there's something in it for everyone. Obviously, there's a lot of gore and, you know, stuff
like that.
And I know a lot of people who, you know, I've said to people when I've been watching it, I said, oh, man, I'm watching The Walking Dead at the moment. Absolutely brilliant. And a few people I know have sort of said, I just don't really want to watch it. It's just like, it's a lot of, and that's fair enough, because a lot of people don't like
you know,
constant blood and guts and gore and stuff. But the thing is, it gets overused to such a point that it becomes almost comedy, you know, the use of gore and people getting torn apart. It's almost comic book, you know.
Well, it's just part of the course,
that
though,
it,
isn't
that it loses its kind of terror. But yeah,
it's just kind of like, it's just okay. That's how he died.
Yeah.
Next.
I think we should think about wrapping it up. We've talked for quite a while on a...
Well, how long has this one been, Ben?
...on this subject. I think this is definitely one of our longer ones. So we've talked for a good while. So is there anything else you'd like to say about The Walking Dead, or shall we quit while we're ahead?
No, I think only to say go ahead, check it out. Bear seems to like the binge watch approach for this.
I don't know. I mean, it's a tricky one.
You don't like to wait too long.
I'm not very patient. I don't have patience. But then I know a lot of people who really like watching the week by week method. But I think the reason I could talk so much about it today, and the reason I remember like almost every episode and almost all the characters and how they all died, and the only reason I can do that is because I watched it over such a short period of time. If I watched it over 7 years, no way I'd be remembering stuff that happened back in series 2 and 3. So it depends how you are. I'm not particularly patient with series like this, so I'd like to just get it done. You know, just get through it and get it finished, then talk about it, move on.
Okay, so when the next season comes out, should we hit it again and do an update?
Yeah, I think we should do an update.
I think we should.
Maybe wait till the end of the series, or maybe we'll do a mid-season.
No, we'll review. Wait. We'll package it up nicely.
Yeah.
Unless it's so good that we have to talk about it.
But we've also got, now Walking Dead is over, mm-hmm. we're now starting to get the new Game of Thrones trailers trickle through.
Yeah, I've been avoiding. I know that they're looking to wrap that up.
Yeah. Well, they've confirmed that. I don't think it's this series. I think there's another one, isn't there?
Two more, I think.
And
we've got two more.
This is the penultimate series. But I don't know. It looks like it. I'm not a massive fan of it, but this looks like it could have some cojones.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
For real. Okay, guys. That's us for now, then.
Darkness, lead me on my way, lead me home.